Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan. I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that. Let's get it started. All
pelicans,
all the time.
Welcome to the show. I've got two words for you, Michael McNamara. Summer League.
Not
excited?
I won't be excited until I see that trophy. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm hoping for some hybrid of the Stanley Cup and the Lombardi Trophy or something fantastic. I want the Pelicans to bring it back to New Orleans. I imagine, minimum 8,000 to 10,000 people meeting them at the airport when they bring that trophy back?
I fully expect a parade.
Yeah. I mean, at least a couple million in attendance. But that's what I think of when I think of Summer League. I think it's the first year where a champion will be crowned, and seems like it's we have a chance, a shot at it, just as much as anyone else.
So you're actually there watching these games, writing about them. Basketball's not very good.
No, it's not. The refs don't help at all. I mean, there's summer league refs as well as summer league players, and it's just it's awkward. There's no spacing. You could tell. I mean, so often a team will run a play and then two guys will go to the same spot and they'll just kill the play. It's much closer to street or pickup basketball than it is any kind of organized basketball, but there's still, quality things to take out of it. I've enjoyed, the off the court stuff as much as on the court. Anthony Davis has kind of been an assistant coach here. He's talking a lot before and after practices, giving little mini motivational speeches. So I like seeing him become a leader. I like seeing Eric Gordon come out here and supporting the team. And obviously, so a lot of little things, off the court, along with some players, showing some skills on the court. I think it's worthwhile.
I agree. I mean, one of the things you always got to take out is, there are players who, light up a game. Our own Marco Bellinelli, I think, early on in Summer League, he, set a record that stood for a while for most points in a game. So, I mean, you got to take all that with a grain of salt. But you can, especially if you've seen the players play before, see how they grow, how they're doing differently. And, of course, the focus on this team, really, has been Austin Rivers. So I've watched all three of the games now. My general impression is he's better. I wouldn't go much further than that, would you?
No, I mean, he's doing one thing really well. He's basically driving right and finishing at the hoop better than we had seen in the past. But, you know, as I wrote in the recap today, I see him in a lot of pick and rolls. He never splits those two defenders. So really, he either goes super wide around the big who's hedging. Sometimes he gets up his dribble way too early and looks for somebody to bail him out. I mean, he really hasn't done anything other than one of those two things whenever he's in the pick and roll. I only remember one spot up jump shot that he hit. There's been a couple of really ugly jumpers, an air ball three. So on offense, no, I see a guy that's attacking. He has a little more burst when he attacks, and he's finishing a little better, but I don't see much improvement. On defense, though, I will say that I haven't seen anybody get by him without needing to use a pick. I think he's taken a lot of pride in his defense, and I would say that on that end, he's continuing to evolve, you know, from what we saw late in the season last year.
Yeah. I mean, he is definitely getting really active, but I mean, he's still offensively really limited to the floaters being his most effective thing. He still sometimes gets to the rim and can finish a layup, which is actually, that is refreshing, because if you remember this time last year, Austin Rivers was already stopped playing Summer League because he'd been knocked to the floor so many times, and he's hitting the floor now, but he's popping back up again. He's not getting injured. He's clearly tougher and can take a hit a lot easier. But last year also, I mean, I think he's probably like 3 of 722 at this point, shooting-wise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's actually scored more points than he's taken shots so far this summer league. That first game that he had, actually, he had some change of pace moves in that first game, which were pretty amazing to draw and ones. So, you know, he's showing a little bit there, but it's still almost entirely reliant on that floater and the layups. He has no ability to do a mid-range pull-up, or he doesn't even try. So, actually, I don't know. He may be really good at it, but I've never seen him take one unless he had to throw something up there. So I think that's got to be the next thing on his game, because he gets that first move where he beats his first defender and gets into space. But if he has to close in, he's now giving them the chance to block a shot, the big bigs who come rolling over. So if he can pull off that mid-range at some point, he could be a really effective scorer if he can get that as a reliable shot.
Yeah, I watch him more when he's playing off the ball on offense, because, again, I think he's going to be the fourth guard for this team. I think he's going to get somewhere between 12 and 16 minutes. But he's always going to be on the floor with Tyreek or Gordon or Holiday or maybe two of those guys. And, you know, I think the ball is going to be in their hands more than his. And I just want to see him be able to, you know, move off the ball, maybe backdoor cuts or, you know, at the very least spot up and just have the confidence to shoot and knock down a three-pointer as opposed to, you know, it always seems like he has to get into rhythm by dribbling the ball or working a pick and roll. I will say, though, I'm really interested to see with his, you know, his explosiveness being back, his ability to get to the rim and finish. I'm really looking forward to seeing him with some quality big men that he could throw an alley-oop to, or, you know, even just dish off a pass once he gets by his man. The Pelicans don't really have that. I mean, Zeller and Brockman don't exactly, you know, scare other teams when they rim run. Cameron,
you mean Withy, not Zeller?
Yeah, sorry, I got Zeller on the brain after today.
But
Withy and Brockman, I don't know. I don't really see any other options when Rivers drives. He's either looking to take his own shot or he's looking to kick out to Darius Miller. He doesn't really seem to have much confidence in the big men on the interior. So looking at that, but like I said, we're talking about a fourth guard here. You know, a fourth guard on any team is probably going to have pretty big holes in their game. At least it seems like he could do one thing really well on the offensive end. And again, can't take away from his defense because, you know, Iman Shumpert, I don't know how he finished, but he had 0 points through three quarters in that first game. And Deion Waiters scored a bit and got Rivers in foul trouble, but they were all, you know, using picks from Deller. And when he tried to go one-on-one with Rivers, Rivers stayed with him, contested shots. So as much as I would love to see a huge jump on the offensive end, I think there's been a small one there, but I think we're looking at a guy who could really defend in this league already.
Well, I will say this. I actually counted the number of times in those three games where he was posted up, because last year that was a staple of other teams. They would get a big guard on him, they would post him up, and they'd score on him. And this season, or this, not this season, but this summer league, I have seen 9 post-ups. Most of them were Jones. Was it Damian Jones? Dominique Jones, sorry. He's a big, powerful guard. Used to play for the Mavericks, and he was at the Bucks. They managed to score one basket on 9 attempts because he defended them so well. Clearly, he is getting into it on that side of the floor, and that's good. I'm perfectly happy with that.
I don't make it a habit to stare at men's legs much, but you could tell Rivers' base is a lot stronger. His legs are a lot stronger. Like, he's starting to look like an NBA player. Because you're right. I remember Ray Allen in the final exhibition game last year just taking him down in the post and pushing him around with ease. And you know, today he was covering Deion Waiters, who's a, you know, pretty strong, powerful guard. And he definitely held his own. He did not look like an undersized guy anymore. So,
yeah. So, Rivers, we'll talk about the other vets, or mini vets, I guess we should call them, who are there on the team. But let's talk about the other rookies. We have Pierre Jackson and Jeff Withey. They didn't play the first game because of the trades and physicals were all not all sorted quite out yet. But they have played since. If you had to lay money on it, which of those two guys definitely has a roster spot this year, no questions asked?
I think Withey only because Pierre Jackson is Gravis Vasquez on speed. Remember when we talked last year that if you took the amount of good plays and counted them up, Vasquez would probably lead the team, but he would also lead the team in bad plays?
Yeah.
I mean, that's Pierre Jackson. He just does it with more quickness. I mean, I think he's made the three most impressive passes and kind of ooh-ah plays so far in summer league for the Pelicans, and he's also made the biggest head-scratching, what is he thinking? This guy doesn't even look like he belongs, you know, in Europe. Type of plays. I mean, it's one or the other. It's so extreme. And I just think, you know, I think that would drive Monty crazy where, you know, Withey is a big body that'll go out there, you know, get you six, allow you to use 6 fouls. He'll change a couple shots at the rim. And, you know, he's not going to try to do too much on offense. So if I had to bet, I think Withey has a better chance of making the team, even though I think that Pierre Jackson is the type of guy that if you stick with him and develop him, you know, has more upside and could really be an explosive scorer off the bench who also, you know, could make plays for others. But next year, Withey for me. How about you? What have you seen?
It's definitely Withey. I mean, so just to give people an idea who haven't watched the game, very first possession Pierre Jackson had, dribbled the ball off his own foot out of bounds. There was nobody around him. He wasn't like, he was starting to make a move, forgot the ball, kicked it, went out of bounds. So, yeah. I don't know, like, he's unbelievably quick. Jackson is like one of the fastest guys out there. On the defensive end, he can stay in front of people really well. But he's also really small. He can't contest them particularly well. He dies on picks. Withey is a space eater, and I will be honest, the difference between Withy and Tyler Zeller, who we were watching this year, in the Cleveland game, I wouldn't say there's really much any difference between those two guys. They're pretty similar to me. I mean, Zeller, I know, has some offensive moves that Withy doesn't have, like hitting hook shots around the basket. But as far as, like, running the floor, rebounding, hedging, defending, Withy's probably a little bit better. So there's not much difference between those two guys to me. So if that's what we got for Robin Lopez, is a solid guy who we've always talked about as being a solid backup for years, I'm fine with that. Robin Lopez was a solid backup for years.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably what you're going to see with Withy. I've been a little disappointed in his lack of just nastiness and aggressiveness. You know, when the ball comes off the rim, he looks at it, and if it's in his area, he'll grab it, but he's not one of those guys that, you know, rebounds outside of his space and just is willing to bowl or knock anybody over. Like, if he had John Brockman's aggressiveness, and his arms would be nice too, but if he had Brockman's kind of aggressiveness and nastiness, that would be a guy I'm more excited about. I mean, Brockman, it's been funny. The last two games, the opposing team has just been forthright in wanting to pick a fight with John Brockman. I mean, John Henson and Larry Sanders didn't even play in the game last night, and they were standing up on the bench, cursing Brockman, yelling at the ref to watch out for illegal elbows. Like, other teams just hate that guy. And if Withy has some of that nastiness combined with his length, and he actually has a soft little face-up jumper, you know, as well. But, you know, it's just something hopefully Monty could instill in him, but he just doesn't have that nasty killer instinct, you know, willing to hurt people for a rebound type of attitude right now. But there are a lot of positive things there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple times in the game against Cleveland where Brockman actually threw Withy aside to grab a rebound.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, coaches love that. Like, you want that. Nothing matters as much as that next rebound. And like I said, Withy is really a presence in the paint. There was a possession today in the Cleveland game where he had one block, and then you just saw him sizing the next one up. And a guy tried to throw it up, and it looked like they were playing summer beach volleyball in Vegas here. He just spiked it. The thwap could be heard throughout the arena, he definitely has that presence, but there's just, you know, just a lack of that absolute nastiness and dog that you like to see in some of your big men. But a lot of length, and he bothers a lot of shots.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I would, just even based on what I, because he's actually solid at hedging on pick and rolls. He's not the fastest guy out there. Jerry V said he was a little bit of a lumberer. I don't know if I call him a lumberer. He's not slow to me. He gets back to where he needs to be for a size perfectly fine. He moves around fine out there. But you are right. He's also not an athlete. He's not a guy who's going to go outside of his area and rebound. If the ball comes to his area, he'll probably grab it because he's taller than the other guy. And, you know, at one point they were talking about how he was muscling some players out of the way, and really he never did. He just kind of sealed them and stood his ground and then grabbed the ball. So don't expect, like, amazing out of Withy, but you should expect adequate, I think. Pierre Jackson... I should go back to him. I mean, watching him play, the player who came to mind is Jameer Nelson. If Jameer Nelson kept forgetting the ball every other play, there's just something about, like, their sizes that are similar, the way that they try to split picks, the way they moved around the floor, and the way they always had to, like, get to open space on the floor and then still really fade away to get their shot off because they're so small. That just reminded me of Jameer Nelson for some reason. Do you disagree or agree?
No, I see some of that. I really like Pierre Jackson in transition. He's always looking up. I mean, he had a beautiful alley-oop to Brockman today, but he's always
going. Wait, you're calling that an alley-oop?
Yeah.
It was kind of like an alley layup.
But
there was no oop.
Yeah, I mean, you're reaching for things in summer league to applaud. But but yeah, I mean, you notice when Rivers gets the ball in transition, he kind of goes out a little bit too wide. He doesn't exactly push it the way that you would hope that a quick point guard does. But I really like Pierre in transition, and I love when he gets into the lane. I don't know how at 5'9", 5'10", I mean, I've stood next to the guy several times now. I had my wife stand next to him. If he's 5'10", that's stretching it. I mean, he is a small guy, but somehow, even amongst the trees, it seems to me that he finds, you know, baseline cutters, big men, or even kickout options better than anybody else on this summer league roster. I mean, Brian Roberts, when he gets in the lane, is just thinking one thing, but Pierre has gotten in the lane a couple times in these two games and found people. But I mean, you got to remember, these guys, they haven't, Pierre Jackson has had 1 2-hour practice
right.
with these teammates, with these guys. He's also, I mean, you know where Pierre Jackson's family is sitting. He played high school in Vegas. His family lives here. His family and friends are all here watching. He's trying to impress. He admitted himself that he was pressing, you know, and trying to do too much after the games. You know, I think it'll slow down, but, I mean, you see the makings of some really fascinating potential. And as you said, on the defensive end, he's a bit of a liability, especially when people try to post him up, but isn't it nice to have a point guard who could pressure full court and stick with the guy? I mean, he's done that for two games now, and it definitely brings an added dimension to your defense.
And he is also very quick. There was a time against the Bucks where both he and Roberts were on the floor, and they ran this handoff where he handed to Roberts. Roberts ran a pick and roll quick on the right side as Pierre, like, flash into the lane at full speed, then darted back out off of a down screen to the corner. And he was, I forget who it was, but he was being traced by a pretty quick player. And that guy was just, had no chance of keeping up with Jackson. So if Jackson can, like, get just stop pushing so hard to get things, amazing things to happen, you know, he has a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a hard job in front of him with Roberts, Rivers, and the big guys all sitting in front of him in that lineup.
Yeah, I don't know if it's this year or right away, but I think long term he beats out Roberts. You know, it just, I don't know. I just can't imagine the team really liking Roberts too much. I mean, it's just, it's so ball dominant, and, you know, score mentality is really all that he's looking for. And with the talent that we have now, I don't see a need for a guy like that. The other thing I will say I like about Pierre Jackson, I don't know if this shows up. I don't know how wide the camera angles or even how good they are on NBA TV at Summer League. But if you watch him off the ball on offense, he comes off screens. It's a blur. His guy can't keep up with him. Where, you know, with Rivers and Roberts, when they're coming off screens, running the baseline, you know, coming to the weak side to get the ball to start the offense on the other side, their guys are, like, right on their hips. Pierre Jackson, he just flies around the court, and nobody could keep up with him. And it's really nice to see him be able to create space off the ball, and you could see again with better talent and big men that he's a guy that might be able to make some spectacular plays, but he's not going to get on the court until he cuts out the horrible plays as well.
Yeah. So Roberts, he looks like the same guy to me. There's nothing new there. There's nothing different. He's playing the exact same way he played during the season.
Yeah, I mean, which is good. It's helping us get wins in summer league. I can't imagine, like I said, to me, Tyreek, Holiday, Gordon, you know, as long as they're healthy going into the game, at least one of those guys is going to be on the court at all times. And probably you're going to have one of either Davis or Ryan Anderson, if not both, on the court at all times. Right. Ryan Roberts dribbling around and creating offense at times last year was our best option because of the lack of talent. I mean, you'd rather have him do that than Xavier Henry try to do something. But now with the added talent, that is never going to be our best offensive option, never. So he doesn't bring you anything else defensively. I just don't see, you know, how he gets on the court or why, you know, this team needs him or how they would use him.
Yeah, so Brent Berry was doing the color for Joel Myers in the Cleveland game. And Brent was – he kind of annoyed me when he did it. He got his little soapbox about Austin Rivers. Because, again, it was the old tried crap that Austin Rivers had, like, some ego issue. And he was put into his place last year, which if anybody had – you know, anybody who paid any attention to actual Austin Rivers playing for the Pelicans, they would have realized that, you know, he didn't have any issues of that sort. But he had, like, a comment, like, oh, like 3 minutes left in the game where Roberts had received the ball, tried to run the pick and roll, like, four times in a row, ended up going nowhere, threw the ball to Austin Rivers, got it back, and then tried the same play, like, three times and ended up jacking a shot. And he goes, Brian Roberts dribbles a lot to get one shot off. And, yeah, I was like, yeah, that's Brian Roberts. He's Gennaro Pargo. I mean, he's Gennaro Pargo, but he's got a better jump shot than Pargo ever did.
Yeah, and Pargo was needed on a Hornets team that had absolutely no bench. I mean, his options were Ryan Bowen, you know, Bonzi Wells or Bobby Jackson. Like, you know, there was a time and a place for Gennaro Pargo, but again, both Pelicans units this year are going to be so talented. I don't ever see how having Brian Roberts on the court helps your team more than it hurts it.
Right. So let's move away from Roberts. He is what he is. And he's 28. That should be expected. To the guy who's actually, I'll be honest, he's disappointed me the most, Darius Miller. He's the same player he was last year, which means every game he'll have one highlight offensively, one highlight defensively, and the rest of the game, you won't even know he played.
Yeah. I mean, when the Pelicans signed Anthony Morrow, which we'll get to later in the podcast, people were jumping to conclusions, asking, what does this mean for Eric Gordon? You know, is Ryan Anderson going to get traded now? Because now we have another three-point shooter, all the way to, will this take out minutes for Austin Rivers? I firmly believe that the Morrow signing is going to essentially take away all minutes from Darius Miller. I mean, when I watch Darius Miller in these games, when somebody drives and kicks it out to him for an open three, I'm fairly certain that it's going to go in most of the time. Whenever he's doing anything else, putting the ball on the floor, trying to run pick and roll, taking a mid-range jumper, absolutely anything else, I just cover my eyes and you know, I know it's not going to end well. He has one, I would say, slightly above average skill in the NBA, and that's being a spot-up three-point shooter on the wing. Other than that, there's really nothing else that, you know, I think he does that helps you win games at all. And if you got a guy in Anthony Morrow who's shown that he could be an elite spot-up shooter, you know, I think that whatever minutes are left on the wing are between Morrow and Darius Miller, and I have no confidence that Miller's going to win that job. I fully expect Morrow to win it and Miller to be relegated to the bench or perhaps even let go.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you say that you're fairly confident that he's going to hit a three-pointer if he's open and they kick the ball to him. I'm not even confident of that because half the time he does a pump fake, whether they're anywhere near him or not. So I'm like, why? You're there to shoot. So shoot. And he doesn't shoot all the time, even when he's got enough time. So, yeah, I've been kind of disappointed in Miller, which, you know, I was rooting for him, but there's a reason why he was sixth man on that Kentucky team.
Yeah.
So let's go to the fan favorite. Everybody I've seen talking about this team.
The Deathpool Bowls Award winner.
Seems to think that Brockman is amazing. And you, of course, have made it very clear through Twitter and other things that you do not find Brockman amazing, although you enjoy watching him play. So what is the difference between, say, having Brockman on the team and having Lance Thomas on the team, though?
I don't think either one of them plays. I think, okay, if you've been to a game and watched the Pelicans, or I guess last year the Hornets bench, there is, I mean, Lance Thomas is the ultimate cheerleader. He's a team leader. He's a guy that's always there with an uplifting word. You know, there's just so many intangibles that he brings on that end, gives 100% at all times, takes charges, can hit that baseline jumper. I mean, there's multiple things that I think Lance Thomas brings to your team as a 12th or 13th man, which I fully expect him. And I guess, you know, the thought of bringing in Brockman, that would be the battle. Which guy do you want as your 12th or 13th man? I just, all those things I listed, Thomas brings. I don't know what Brockman brings. He could help you rebound. And like I said, he's the guy that other teams just absolutely hate. You know, whether it's on purpose or inadvertently, he's going to throw four or five elbows into the opposing team's face every game. So, I mean, there's a couple things there, but I think you're talking about your 12th or 13th man and a guy who's been with the team for a couple of years that knows what the coach is trying to implement and who's as positive and vocal and as big of a leader as Lance. I just think Lance would have the edge in that battle if that's what they're looking
for. So, but here's a question. I mean, so Brockman, there's no question he is offensively limited. I mean, he is not quick of feet. He cannot get a shot off against most people in the paint because he's kind of short. He's powerful, a rebounding, you know, he's always been an amazing rebounder. I mean, even when he played for Milwaukee and the Sacramento, his rebounding numbers were great.
Mm-hmm.
Is he really that different than, say, Reggie Evans?
Oh, I mean, come on. Reggie Evans was the best rebounder in the entire NBA last year. Is he that different? Yeah, I think Reggie Evans could, you know, defend multiple positions. I don't know. I don't think Brockman could defend either position in this league. I think he could grab rebounds, but when you're talking about man-to-man defense or even being pulled out to the perimeter, I don't see the ability for Brockman to do that. And yeah, I mean, his rebounding numbers were good in Milwaukee. They look great in summer league. But I just think he's so limited in other areas that I can't see it. Again, the Evans comparison, Evans had the best defensive rebounding rate in the NBA. I mean, can he be a poor man's Evans? Yeah, but Reggie Evans, you know, got a minimum contract last year and wasn't sought after by many teams. So a poor man's minimum contract player, yeah, he could be that.
Okay. Yeah, so I agree with you. I mean, Reggie Evans is quicker moving his feet and laterally than I think Brockman is. I think Brockman actually could give you a, like, rebound rate wise. I think he could probably give, you know, the leaders a run for their money, at least be among them. But you're right. I mean, in a lot of respects, and I hate making this comparison because they're just physically similar, but he reminds me of Kevin Love without any of the offensive talent. because Kevin Love is a horrible defender. He does not stay in front of anybody, but he's a genius rebounder who just goes after it. And I think Brockman kind of reminded me in the way they rebounded. They're kind of ground-bound rebounders who just get in there and just force their way into where the ball is coming off. Right. So if anybody wants a player who's similar to an all-star player with no offensive talent whatsoever, Brockman's your man.
Yeah, I think he should be in the league this year. I just, again, I don't see any part in a rotation for him on our team. So if you're talking about 12th, 13th man, I would either have a team leader like Lance there, or I would have a guy that, you know, I'm trying to develop down the line like Pierre or Jeff Withey. You know,
and I really shouldn't be trying to push Brockman either, because, you know, our photographer Drew loves Lance Thomas. so we got to give him a break.
Yeah, he's hard not to love. I mean, just always positive and always great communication. As you saw today, took some charges and he can knock down that baseline jumper. I mean, remember, Lance Thomas is a guy a couple times last year who's going to be a tank destroyer. He had a couple games that were hurting the tank down the line. He could actually make an impact in some games. So, yeah, I think Brockman is a guy, he's the exact type of guy fans are going to fall in love with during summer league. I mean, he's almost dove into my lap two or three times now chasing loose balls. He's, you know, all over the boards, but it's just a numbers game when it comes down to this roster. And
really?
Yeah.
Really? You're going to talk about him diving into your lap to chase loose balls?
I didn't go there. I didn't I didn't even really think about
it. I thought you were in Vegas with your wife.
I am, but, you know, whatever happens here.
So there is one guy sitting on the bench for almost every one of these games, Anthony Davis. You said that you actually got kind of near him while things were going on, and you got an impression of how he looks. So could Brockman break him?
Yeah, I mean, I firmly believe that the Pelicans have Brockman here to try to, you know, put his arms on Davis's body or do something genetically, you know, to enhance. I look at Anthony Davis and he's been at all the practices, all the games, been around them multiple times now. And I've been here saying that he's so slight. Even a guy like Larry Sanders, I was watching Larry Sanders last night. He was on the bench, during the whole game. And he's really solid in his base and, you know, he seems to have more of a physical stature than Davis. I mean, Davis, he's really slight and perhaps he's very strong guys. I don't know, but, you know, just the guy that I see in front of me, it feels like it would be pushing it to ask him to play 15 minutes or so at center every night and hope that his body doesn't break down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think you can do it against some teams. I mean, there's no way you could ever pull that off against, you know, three or four of the teams in the league. Like, you know, Memphis always is the easy one to point out, but there's a few others out there. But I think you could get away with it for only like a quarter's worth of minutes, and I think you kind of need to.
Yeah.
I mean, with this particular rotation, he's got to get 32 minutes or so, but Anderson's got to get a nice chunk of minutes too. And somebody's got to cover the center minutes, whether it's Jason Smith or, segue, Greg Oden. Have you heard anything about Greg Oden recently?
Yeah, I mean, Dell is definitely out here. Saw him last night before the game, and I guess Oden's going to be meeting with Dell and a couple other teams. Or as ESPN would say, Dallas and a couple other teams.
Right.
Not include the Pelicans because we're not newsworthy. But You know, it's interesting. It's something that we've discussed in the past. Obviously, a connection with Monty, and you know, Greg Oden's kind of a different guy. He said that he really doesn't want, you know, the pressure of coming back and getting big minutes or having a big role or a lot of responsibility or fanfare, limelight, stuff like that. He wants to come back with as little attention on him as possible and just try to work his way back into the league, see if he can do it. And, you know, so that I could see there being some enticing things for him here, but I don't know. How do you feel? Do you think that the Pelicans are really in the hunt for his services, or, you know, both sides are just doing their due diligence and having a little talk?
Honestly, I think that they would be pleased to have him come on for a no risk contract. I really do. I mean, I think Dell would be happy to have him come in and try out. I mean, because really, what is the risk here? If he gets injured again, do you have to pay his medical costs for a year? I mean, it's less risky than what they did with, you know, Andrew Bynum, where they guaranteed a quarter of his contract up in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And Oden, for what minutes he did play, was one of the best rebounders in the league and one of the best shot blockers in the league. And, yeah, he couldn't hit any shot around the basket with any reliability. But if we're talking about somebody who can platoon with Jason Smith and Withy and Davis to cover the center role, that's a perfectly satisfying skill set for me. So I actually think that they would be interested to go for him. But, you know, this is the weird part. They talk about, well, he's going to meet with the Mavs and two other teams, and the other two teams are, of course, are the Pelicans and the Kings. But then, like, they always slip in, oh, and he also talks with the Spurs and the Heat. So really, it's five teams. And, the Pelicans can't really give him anything more than the Spurs or the Heat can give him. So why would he ever pick the Pelicans? If you can get the same contract out of the Pelicans that you can out of the Spurs or Heat, why would you ever pick the Pelicans?
I think it would have to come down to, I mean, first of all, Dell Demps is a salesman, which we've heard multiple free agents now say that, you know, he's done a great job on selling him. He told Ryan Anderson the plan last summer. Ryan Anderson said he was excited. Tyreke Evans showed him the roster and told him the plan this past summer, and Evans got excited and signed on. Obviously now Eric Gordon's reinvested because he's excited enough finally. So, I mean, you would have to bank on Dell as a salesman, you know, Monty's relationship with Oden. And again, if you go to San Antonio or Miami, everybody just thinks that every player's priority is chasing a ring, but you know, those aren't huge media markets, but because they're good teams with championship expectations, you know, there's going to be a lot more attention on him there than if he comes to New Orleans. Not going to be, you know, as big of a story. It's a small market. It's a team that obviously gets little or no exposure nationally. So there's maybe something there to entice him of, you know, of the fact that there's not going to be a big spotlight on him. And again, Monty and Dell could point to, we've resurrected some careers here in the last couple of years. I mean, Marco Bellinelli had a foot out the door, you know, out of the league. Nobody was really looking, you know.
We got him for Julian Wright.
Yeah, and turned him around and now playing for the Bulls, signed a contract with the Spurs this past summer. I mean, Jason Smith was the guy who hadn't done anything until he came here, Gustavo Ayon. I mean, so they could kind of point to their track record of, look, we've been able to develop guys, we care about guys, we'll work on their game. You know, this isn't just about wins and losses. It's about, you know, stuff beyond basketball. You would think it would be a sales tactic like that mixed with Oden's desire to not really have a huge spotlight on him. If he signs, I would expect that's why. I don't think he's like most players, you know, really caring about money or, you know, a chance at the ring. I think he just wants a chance to see if he's still got anything left and wants a team that's going to be patient with him while he explores if he does.
Yeah. They did also point out in the broadcast that Odin's coach, one of his big man coach in Portland was Monty Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, and
so,
but that,
got that
either way, I mean, he does have a bad taste in his mouth, in, you know, with regard to some things that happened in Portland, and you know, in some ways he felt like he was rushed back or not treated, you know, with kid leather gloves, I guess. So I don't know which way that goes, but yeah, there's definitely a relationship there. But you know, a guy like Odin probably has relationships with you know, somebody on almost every team. So it's interesting, and I definitely think, again, like you said, the Pelicans, why wouldn't you be interested on essentially a minimum contract? You know, there's really no downside. So it'll just come down to him choosing, you know, which minimum contract works best for him based on priorities outside of money. So we'll see what those priorities are when he picks a team.
Right. So you brought him up. Eric Gordon, he was actually at some of these games. They did have him as a guest on the broadcast for the Bucks game. He didn't have much to say. That I mean, it wasn't like you should go listen to it because he had like profound thoughts or anything. It was more along the lines of them asking him, so can you share a ball with all the different players that are now on the Pelicans? And him saying, yes. But he was actually smiling and really positive about everything. And, I mean, he's still a little awkward because you could tell he was really excited to have Tyreek and Drew to play with. And he kind of caught himself. He says, I don't mean to say anything bad about, you know, the guys who left, Vasquez and Lopez, but I'm really, you know, these guys are really good. And so he was like, he's still just as awkward as he's always been. But here's the thing I wanted to bring up with you. I know you read Bill Simmons, and Simmons' entire like comments on Gordon over the past couple of years have all been revolving around one thing, about how Gordon hasn't had a happy basketball experience. When he went to Indiana, they had a whole lot of issues with the coaching there. I believe the coach got fired at some point. And then he goes, of course, to the Clippers, who are terrible. Just when the Clippers seem to be maybe finally possibly turning it around, he gets sent off to, you know, in the Chris Paul trade to the Pelicans or the Hornets, who are a really bad rebuilding team. He's had these injury issues, even like when he went to the Olympics, you know, summer camp. There was still a lot of like bad things going on for him that were basketball related. Do you buy into the fact that maybe just the fact that they reloaded around him, that we'll see a different Eric Gordon this year?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I do understand. I mean, part of me says you got to take some personal responsibility. If you're, you know, LeBron would never be on a team that sucks because he's good enough to be surrounded with, you know, essentially garbage and still,
such a Pavlovich.
Yeah, and still be fine. So at some point you can't just say, you know, I haven't been surrounded by talent, and I, you know, I'm not happy, and this all sucks, and it's not fair to me, and I'm not having a happy basketball experience. You know, at some point you need some personal responsibility there. But on the other end, yeah, I mean, I could understand it, especially when you look around at different friends around the league who do have a positive experience, or who, you know, are playing for winning coaches, winning teams. I mean, he was very successful on his AAU team, and you know, since then it's just been you know, one odd situation after the other. But again, personal responsibility. He sold out a perfectly good school for Indiana last minute. He went back on his commitment. I mean, you know, karma is a you-know-what, and he had a crappy attitude when he came to New Orleans, and he just so happened to get injured. It was the first game, even though he played through it. He bumped knees with Grant Hill. I mean, he had a crappy attitude. He He left, his original college choice, kind of sold them out, went to Indiana, and didn't have a great experience there. I mean, he is not blameless in this whole situation, but, you know, hopefully now that he is surrounded with some talent, he could appreciate it after where he's been the last couple of years. But I don't think that real winners, real leaders look and blame other people for their situation. So I don't think this is going to be a fix-all, cure-all. But I do think that him coming into the season with a positive attitude and looking forward, to playing this year is going to mean more good things than bad.
So I have a couple more follow-up questions about Eric Gordon and what you think is going to happen with him. But I just realized I jumped without asking the all-important question about Greg Oden. Do you want him on the team?
Oh, yeah. I
mean, would you? You would?
There's absolutely nothing. I mean, nothing to be left. This isn't Brandon Roy where you're giving him 2 years, $10 million. I mean, we can't give him anything other than the minimum. So there's no cap commitment. He's not a guy that is going to hurt your locker room. And, yeah, I'm struggling to find any downside whatsoever. So, yeah.
Yes. Okay, I agree. All right, so following up on the Eric Gordon thing, we have a poll on our site. Who next year is going to lead the Pelicans in scoring? And the overwhelming favorite with 42% of the vote, which is almost double the next nearest vote getter, is Eric Gordon. Is that a... That's over Jrue Holiday, who drew 23%, Tyreek is getting 17%, Anthony Davis is getting 11%, and Ryan Anderson gets 5%. There's only 7 votes for, so clearly it's one of those 5 guys people feel. Is Eric Gordon being the leading scorer just like a side effect of the fact he was a leading scorer last year, and people are just sticking with what they know? Or do you think it's likely that Eric Gordon will be our leading scorer? And when I say leading scorer, it's clearly you and I both feel he'll be injured for some portion of the season, but points per game.
I think it's because that's clearly his role on this team. I mean, he is the scorer. Jrue Holiday is a guy that has the capability to score, but he's going to be more of a facilitator. Tyreek Evans he might score similar points per 36 minutes as Gordon, but he probably won't get as many minutes. I personally think that Anthony Davis is going to be the leading scorer on the team.
Yeah, I voted the same way.
I just think that getting out in transition, Kobe assist buckets where one of those guards miss and he follows it up kind of like he did for the game winner in the Celtics game, lobs, transition. Like, I think he'll be the leading scorer on something like 55, 56% shooting. I just think the guards have to share so much. And, like, I think Anthony Davis will be the beneficiary of a lot of easy buckets created either in transition or off of misses when the guards attract, all the big men. So that's how I would go, but yeah, I mean, as far as skill set and what their roles are, I think if you were just assigning simpleton roles to this team, you would assign facilitator to Jrue Holiday. I think you would list Eric Gordon as your primary scorer, just because of his skill sets and his ability to score in a multitude of ways. So if it is going to be a perimeter guy, I would bet on Gordon as well.
Yeah. I fully expect that all 5 of those guys will average somewhere between 14.5 and 18 points a game. I don't think we're going to have anybody breaking 18 or 19. I think that's like the upper limit I could see for anybody, because there's so much of the ball having to be moved around between Gordon, Holiday, Evans, Davis, Anderson, and technically Austin Rivers off the bench. He'll probably get some shots too. Jason Smith will get some.
Yeah, I'm curious how they get to that average. Like, is it going to be a thing where we have multiple guys in double figures every night, or Will it be, oh, this was Eric Gordon's night, he had 26 tonight, you know, Evans only had 6, but then it shifts on another night and, you know, they basically, you have 2 or 3 guys, you know, who do the majority of the scoring on a given night, it just changes, or are we always going to see, you know, 4 or 5 guys with more in a game? That's what I'm interested in seeing is how they finish with that average in points, how, you know, how it's done over the course of the season.
Yeah. So Anthony Davis, one of the reasons why I voted for him as probably the leading point getter wasn't even necessarily like the Kobe assists where the guards. that's just a really strange image. The guards miss their shots and he cleans up the mess. It's just the fact that Lopez isn't there, and Lopez ran almost as many pick and roll possessions as the pick man as Davis did last year. So, I mean, those have to be shared out, and Davis is going to get another fair share of them. So you could fully expect Davis to get, you know, 5 or 6 more possessions a game where he's touching the ball in a pick-and-roll situation, and he is deadly finishing the pick-and-roll. So, yeah, I actually think that he will be approaching 18 points a game this season without too much difficulty.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he'll do it on 12 shots, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I think something like 7 for 12 from the field, and then, you know, make 4 for 5 from the free throw line, something like that. I mean, that gets you 18 points. I think it'll be, you know, something in that ballpark. I think he'll be really efficient. I think these guys help him, you know, as much as anybody else on the court. So, interested to see how he does. And like I said, I've really been interested. He's kind of been, they've kind of made him like an honorary assistant coach here. I mean, he's at the end of every practice, he's talking to the guys. He's pulling them aside, giving them little tips and pointers, both in practice and at the games. And, you know, that's just good to see. He's a young guy. He came out of here. He could be doing whatever he wants over the summer. He's coming out of here, working with the guys, taking on a leadership position, and then he's going to obviously be with Team USA in another week. So it's been really good to see him out here and to see Monty out here. And it's funny. After every game, Monty has this huge list of notes, and the first guy he goes up to is Austin Rivers and just pulls him aside, goes over everything, and you know, you could just see there's so much excitement with this team and with people, you know, really buying in from the top all the way down, and having Eric Gordon come out here today and support the team and just look so excited about, you know, the way this roster's taken form. There's a buzz with this team that, you know, you obviously haven't had in a couple of years. And I think it's exciting. I think this is easily the most talented team we've put on the court since 2008, 2009. I firmly believe far more talented team than Monty's first year when we had Chris Paul and David West.
All right. Yeah, I agree. And I fully expect us to have at least one All-Star in the All-Star game in New Orleans. So let me approach the last 2 additions to our team that we are aware of. So Steemsma and Morrow. Is this the end of Jason Smith and Eric Gordon as New Orleans Pelicans?
Which one do you want to talk about first? Which one was more interesting to you?
More interesting.
Or did you, you know, when they made the signing, did you feel like, okay, that this guy has a possibility of making an impact or whatever interesting means to you, but which one kind of raised your swan antennas when the signing went down?
Steemsma.
Hmm.
More because I have a feeling that as it stands right now, he is more likely to get minutes than Morrow.
Okay.
I mean, Morrow is the shooter that everybody wanted. That is all he does. He shoots. But he's also been, since his couple of years in Golden State, where he was a phenomenal shooter and got a good amount of minutes because Golden State didn't have a tremendous amount of talent, he has basically fallen out of rotation in the NBA because he's got no defensive ability whatsoever, and all he does is shoot. Now, he is an amazing shooter. I mean, he is one of the guys who, if he actually played, you know, lots of minutes, he would be in the discussion for best shooter in the NBA, no question about it. But for some reason, I just don't see him getting a lot of minutes on this particular roster. I mean, who's he beat out? I think we talked about this before. The one guy he could steal minutes from is Miller. And how many minutes really was Miller going to get? 8? So Steamsma, however, I could see him come in and slot into a role where they want to keep Jason Smith's minutes to his, you know, 15 to 20 burst minutes of intense physical activity. So they do the platoon idea where Jason Smith gets, you know, 15 to 20 minutes, Steamsma gets 15 to 20 minutes, and Anthony Davis gets 15 to 20 minutes at the center position for this team. So I could see him getting more minutes than Morrow. Do you feel differently, or do you think Morrow is like more of a missing piece? Or
I mean, I don't know if either guy is a missing piece, but I think you're looking at a guy who was a starter in this league not too long ago. He's obviously has one elite skill, and a skill that's very much needed on the Pelicans team. I mean, I think that he's a guy that didn't get a lot of minutes in New Jersey because they weren't able to hide him on defense because they're already too busy hiding Deron Williams. So, you know, if he comes here and you could hide him on defense because you're playing him with Evans, who, you know, we've heard from the Sacramento people is a plus defender. Austin Rivers has obviously developed into a guy that you don't have to hide on the defensive end. All of a sudden, you could hide Morrow on that end and then use his one elite skill on the offensive end. I think he has more potential to make a serious impact. I mean, I think Steamsma is a guy who essentially just, you know, takes up minutes. Maybe he gets 12, 15, 18 a game. He gives you 6 fouls, which a lot of times he's going to use up all 6 in those 12 to 15 minutes. And then, you know, he obviously has an elite skill of his own when it comes to blocking shots. So I don't know. I think that they're both guys who could fill minutes in the short term, but not anybody I see as long-term pieces. But you're a guy who's in love with the three-ball splash. I'm a little surprised that Morrow isn't your guy because, like I said, if you could hide him on defense, that's a guy that, I mean, he could be second on this team, even though he plays limited minutes. He could be second on the team in three-pointers made and definitely have one of the highest, if not the highest, percentages at the end of the year.
I mean, don't get me wrong. When I heard Morrow was joining, I immediately had, like, fantasies of Drew, Gordon, Morrow, and Anderson out there all at the same time, all four of those guys being competent or much, much better than the three-point line. And that can be fun, but I don't know. I just don't – this wing – the swing players, I just don't see them having signed Al-Farouq to a $4 million contract if they're not going to play him a good amount of minutes. And Morrow, I think, only gets minutes right now at the small forward spot. I just think there's too much competition for those guard minutes. I don't think there's any room for him there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we're assuming that Aminu is going to get those minutes just because I guess the size of his contract. But again, it's a 1-year deal. If they loved him that much, they would have given him multiple years. And he's a guy that several times last year went into Monty's doghouse and got pulled from the starting lineup, or even had a couple of DNPs or very short minutes in some games. I mean, it's possible that it happens again. I'm not penciling in Al-Farouq Aminu for 30, 34 minutes a night. I think that there's minutes to be had there. I think, you know, there's going to be those three guard lineups that we see quite a bit. I just think Mara has more potential, but I mean, with Steensma, I don't know. I mean, it was a curious acquisition for me. I guess he does have the big body, but I don't know what he definitely gives you that Jeff Withey doesn't. I mean, you're looking at those two guys, again, as improved as this team is, the Pelicans aren't winning a championship next year, so you're looking at two guys with somewhat similar skill sets, but to me, Withey has a little bit more upside. You know, I could see a situation in which if Withey really starts to improve and picks it up, that perhaps, you know, Steensma is the guy at the end of the bench not getting minutes if Jason Smith and Withey are really playing well and Davis could play 12 to 15 minutes there. So,
oh, absolutely. I think actually Steensma is, I mean, Lance is on the team, but I think Steams was the last big man in the rotation behind Withey. Maybe not to start the season, because Steams at least has a little NBA experience. But, I mean, Steams, no one should be, like, thinking Steams was the answer to really anything. This is a guy who had a sub-50% true shooting percentage, so he can't do anything with the ball and score efficiently. I mean, he's not even, like, a reliable dunker. He's got a pretty high turnover percentage. And his rebounding is, you know, sub Al-Farouq Aminu. Al-Farouq will grab you more rebounds than Steensman will.
Yeah.
So, but he's a shot blocker, and he's a decent defender, so he can get some minutes if you just need somebody to go in there and bang some bodies.
Yeah, I'm telling you, to me, the two really curious moves of the offseason has been the Aminu contract and the Steensma contract, but I really think, the way I really see it playing out, I think Dell has one more ace up his sleeve. You look at those two contracts, they're one-year deals, they're essentially expiring contracts. With the new kind of lax rules regarding, you know, how much you could trade for, you know, with regard to being able to trade for, get 150% of the salary back that you're giving up, I mean, you put Al-Farouq Aminu and Greg Steensma in a package in February for a team that's looking to tank, you know, you could go out and get a $9+ million small forward or $9+ million center again from a team that, you know, is just looking to get rid of a guy on a longer term contract, for two guys on expiring ones. But I think it's a little roll of the dice. Maybe these guys could give you something, but if they can't, they're on one-year deals, and you could turn around and flip them in February for something that, you know, fits your roster a little better. I mean, would the Celtics, you know, if they're really looking to tank, would they be willing to part with Jeff Green if we give them some expiring contracts and maybe a future pick? You know, there's guys like that out there, Marcin Gortat, you know, somebody like, I mean, Phoenix really has no use for him. Trade expiring contracts for expiring contracts and maybe throw in, like I said, a pick down the line. So I think that there's still a lot of flexibility. I think we think this roster is pretty much set, and I think with the core it is. But I think now with these one-year contracts Dell handed out, there's some room around the edges, you know, to go out and make a fairly significant move in February, or have some nice cap space next summer in order to get, you know, one more piece and add it to this core.
So essentially, we should be looking at this as Dell turned Darius Sungaila into Jason Smith. Let's see what he can turn Steensman into.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're thinking that these guys are going to be guys that are definitely on the roster this year and, you know, till the end of the year, but, you know, in February, it's always nice to have those expiring contracts. And honestly, we didn't have it. Our young core is all locked up for 2, 3, 4 years. You know, now you have a couple of guys on 1 year deals that, you know, look good to teams that are tanking or giving up player. I mean, Thaddeus Young, if the 76ers are really going all in on the tank, what use do they have for Thaddeus Young? I mean, there's things that aren't available now that are going to be coming available in February as teams really start to tank for this 2014 draft And I think Dell's put himself in a great position to have, you know, some expiring assets to go after some of these guys. So if they work out, great. If they don't, package them and go out and get a small forward or a center that, you know, could help you win. So I it's a good position to be in. And I think, you know, with Dell, you always got to think two or three steps ahead. And I think he did that with both Aminu and Steamsma.
Yep. I'm assuming you don't have anything else to talk about since we're having technical problems and made you switch to a phone in the middle of it. Anybody who noticed that oddness. So if you had to put odds on it, this is my last question for you before we let you go. So you can go party in Vegas. When the season starts, what are your odds that this is the same, the roster we have right now, except for maybe like one extra small, like minuscule minimum contract, is the same roster that we have that will start the season?
I'd say 90%. I really, again, looking at Anthony Davis, I know I worry about our center position and our interior. I think if Houston is willing to be more flexible with Ashik and maybe throw in other things, I still think the Ashik for Anderson swap has a small possibility, no matter how much each side dismisses it. It just makes sense from, you know, a lot of standpoints. But I don't think it goes through. I think this is pretty much what we see, 90% chance that maybe, you know, the 13th, 14th, 15th roster spots are tweaked a little bit. Maybe they even see somebody in the summer league that they really like on another team, bring that guy in, and somebody we're not even talking about gets one of those positions over Brockman and Lance and, you know, Darius Miller or whatever. So something like that. But I pretty much think our rotation, we know who is going to be getting minutes going into opening day.
I agree. So thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. We'll, of course, have coverage over the rest of the Summer League games and, of course, the Summer League playoffs, the most important playoff series ever.
Yeah, and I do want to say one last thing. I want to thank a lot of our listeners. There's a guy that we've been trying to get on this podcast for a while now, Zach Lowe, writer for Grantland. Actually ran into him today, and he said that that our listeners have been blowing up his Twitter feed, asking him to come on the Bourbon Street Shots podcast, and he has promised that he will be on it, and that was in large part to what you guys did, Noel Appel's three, Kenneth Pierce, also John Morvant. Like there's just a bunch of people that I could list that really went after Lohard, and he's going to come on because of it. I think we should make that a regular thing. I think we should just just have our listeners annoy people until they come on the podcast. So I'm going to ask you guys to do it in the future. Respond again, because you're one for one so far. I'm not going to tell you to go knock on Del Demps' front door, but I'm not going to tell you not to either.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know. Ain't nothing but a party.